All right, our final case this morning is Disciplinary Counsel versus Streeter. And that is case number 130581. For the relator, we have Mr. Caliguri.
Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of this court, my name is Joseph Caliguri. I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in this matter. There are three reasons. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. There are three reasons why this court should reject the board's recommendation of a fully stayed suspension and impose a 2-year suspension with 18 months stayed upon the respondent, David Streeter. First, it is uncontested that the respondent, acting as a fiduciary, misappropriated over $230,000 during an 11-month span. Second, an actual suspension will protect the public by sending the stern message to the lawyers that this court will not tolerate the misappropriation of funds. And third, one of the only reasons why we are here today is because in the board's report, they stated in paragraph 30 that they were constrained to follow any recommendation that conflicted with the Edwards rationale. And this court, nor the board, is bound by Edwards. And an actual suspension does not conflict with the Edwards rationale. In 2010, Mr. Streeter was acting as a title agent. Over the course of 11 months, he began misappropriating unsuspecting homeowners' funds from his IOTA account. He was doing that to replenish a deficiency in his operating account. He would use that money to pay personal and business expenses. With each new misappropriation, he was taking funds on kind of like a Rob Peter to pay Paul scheme, concealing his previous overdrafts and also repaying his previous thefts. That continued on for 11 months. And had it not been for the intervention of Chicago Title, his underwriter, this Ponzi-like scheme would have gone undetected. Now, as I stated a moment ago with regard to the Edwards decision, that case was decided just a few months before the hearing in this case. Mr. Edwards was a longtime practitioner who misappropriated $69,500 from his trust account to assist his estranged wife in starting her own business, hoping that would reconcile their marriage. But there are three critical factors that separate the misconduct in Edwards and the misconduct in the case at bar. First, Mr. Edwards, although he did misappropriate $69,500, before the Office of Disciplinary Counsel had any involvement in his case, he had repaid $32,000 on his own accord. Compare that to what the respondent did in this case. The respondent initially started by misappropriating $6,900. The misappropriations increased in amount each time, $40,000, $50,000, $53,000, and the last two checks totaled $76,000. At no time did the respondent use any of his own funds to repay any of those previous misappropriations. Instead, what he did was he siphoned money from other unsuspecting homeowners and repaid the earlier thefts. And by doing that, he was actually concealing the fact that he had taken the money in the first place. So we have Mr. Edwards, whose conscience got the better of him, and actually did what we would want a lawyer to do and make amends on their own accord. And then you have Mr. Streeter, who simply kept using other people's money to hide his misdeeds.
And what happened to that $230,000 deficiency?
Well, ultimately what happened was when he was caught, he was left holding the bag for about $76,000.
Because of the backfilling, he was being, from, as you said, robbing Peter to pay Paul, so the net there was 76.
Correct.
And then what happened?
And then he repaid the funds.
Out of his own pocket?
He borrowed money from family and friends. He had some fees in some other cases, but yes, from his own funds.
But that was after he was caught.
That was after he was caught. Now, the second critical factor is the fact that what happened when these people were caught. In the Edwards case, there was an overdraft notification sent to Mr. Edwards based upon an overdraft of $832 from his trust account. Again, he had already repaid $32,000, but he did overdraw his account. And when he got that overdraft notification, he responded and he admitted the fact that he had overdrawn the account. But he went one step further, and this is consistent with him repaying the funds. He, on his own accord, told Relator, disciplinary counsel, that he had misappropriated all the other funds, the $69,500. So he took a proactive step in reporting his misconduct. Contrast that with what the respondent did when he was caught. When Chicago Title intervened and discovered that he had that they were exposed for $75,000, the last two checks, he initially stated that it was an accident. You don't accidentally misappropriate $230,000 and use those funds to cover up and conceal your previous misappropriations. Then they turned the matter over to the Rocky River Police Department. And if I could just back up for 1 second, before they turned the matter over to the Rocky River Police Department, it took a subsequent investigation by Chicago Title to uncover all the previous misappropriations.
So he didn't self-report to the Chicago Title?
That's correct. And then it was turned over to Rocky River Police Department. And at that point, he was facing felony charges, and he testified that played on him. That was a very stressful situation for him. Still did not report to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. And then finally, his lawyer, Mr. Marinelli, testified at the disciplinary hearing. And he stated very tellingly, when he learned that Chicago Title had reported this matter to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, he picked up the phone and called Ethan Posner, who was Chicago Title's investigator. And he said to him on behalf of his client, Mr. Streeter, I thought we had resolved this thing. In other words, like, why are you reporting this to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel? And that is a huge distinguishing factor when you look at what Mr. Edwards did, who received a fully state suspension, and what Mr. Streeter did.
What did he mean by, I thought we resolved this? Was there criminal charges that were imposed?
No. Rocky River Police Department elected not to press criminal charges after their investigation. What Mr. Marinelli meant, and this was the way we perceived it at the hearing, was that when he learned that Chicago Title had turned it over to Office of Disciplinary Counsel, he made that phone call to say, like, hey, I thought we were done with this. Rocky River's not going to do anything. Why are you reporting this to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel? In other words, the respondent was willing to roll the dice in this case and hope that his conduct went undetected. And that's so much different than what Mr. Edwards did.
So the reason then that the disciplinary counsel was aware of this was because of Chicago Title's referral, nothing to do with self-reporting.
That's correct. And then the third critical distinguishing factor is simply the amount of funds that were misappropriated. Mr. Edwards misappropriated $69,500, and here we have Mr. Streeter is misappropriating almost $250,000.
There's evidence of OLAP in both of these cases?
Yes.
Speak to that, please.
What happened was when Mr. Koblenz became involved in the case, he had his client check in with OLAP. He signed a contract with OLAP. As far as we know, he's been extremely compliant with that contract. He did suffer major depressive disorder, just like Mr. Edwards did in the other case in which there was a state suspension. So there's no issue really with regard to the mental disability in this case.
Was there the pronouncement by OLAP that the major depressive disability triggered this behavior, or this behavior created a very depressive situation for these people?
Actually, the testimony, I believe, was that the depression stemmed back maybe to 2005 or 2006, so it probably predated the misconduct. But the way it was presented was that it was a contributing factor. I mean, the respondent himself stipulated that he operated with a selfish motive, so I don't think we would say it caused the behavior.
All right.
But certainly, he wasn't in a great place mentally at the time these things were going on. Neither was Mr. Edwards. And There are also many other cases.
Counsel, when you're talking about Edwards, I'm reading the panel's recommendation here. What do they mean they're constrained to follow any recommendation that conflicts with Edwards? What does that mean?
I think it's inartfully worded, but I think what they're saying is that there were a lot of the same mitigating factors in this case as there were in Edwards' case. And there was a misappropriation of funds in both cases. So they felt that they were bound by this court's holding in Edwards to issue a stayed suspension. And I think the reason why we can say that is because in the first or second paragraph of the opinion, they also say that the parties had agreed earlier to an actual suspension of 6 months, 2 years with 18 months stayed in a consent agreement, which was rejected. And so they're going back and saying, now that was rejected, and then Edwards came out, we're stuck. We have to follow Edwards, and Edwards issued a stayed suspension.
Is that true?
That Mr. Edwards?
No, that they're required to follow.
Oh, I don't believe so at all. I don't think they're required to follow the Edwards decision. Every disciplinary case is unique. It stands on its own set of facts. And here, Relator is just pointing out there are several major differences between those two cases. And this case warrants an actual suspension from the practice of law.
And but your thought is that 6 months is sufficient to protect the public in this particular case, 6 months of actual suspension?
Well, that's what we advocated for, so my answer to the question is yes. I do think the misconduct in this case is extremely serious. There's a large amount of money, a lot of concealment, and so at the very minimum, we need to send the message with an actual suspension.
But isn't there a presumption for dishonesty in these cases?
The presumption for misappropriation is disbarment in these cases. And he also—
Is what?
Disbarment. And then there's mitigating factors that can take it down from disbarment. So that's why I'm saying the mental disability is not an issue. He's getting credit for that, even with an actual suspension. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the presumptive sanction in these cases is disbarment. That's where we start. So we would ask that this court reject the recommendation of a fully stayed suspension, suspend Mr. Streeter for an actual period of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Koblenz?
Thank you very much, Madam Chief Justice, Associate Justices of the Court. May it please the Court. My name is Rich Koblenz, and I have the honor of representing Dave Streeter before this honorable court this morning. As I was preparing and reviewing all of the notes, it struck me last night that what we're really here about is not Dave Streeter before this honorable court today. The disciplinary case was about Dave Streeter. But we're not here about Dave Streeter, and quite frankly, I don't think we're here about the public. I think we're here because the Office of Disciplinary Counsel is asking you to create law which will limit your ability to rule in a matter that you as a body deem appropriate in all future disciplinary cases. In other words, what we want to do, what Disciplinary Counsel wants you to do, is hamstring yourselves into not looking at the individual, but only looking at, oh, he misappropriated money, therefore we have the bright line that quite frankly was already taken away.
Do you disagree that the presumption for dishonesty of this magnitude in both of these cases, Edwards and Streeter, is disbarment?
No, I don't. Not at all. The Office of Disciplinary Counsel is advocating for a bright line rule that this court has already taken away in Edwards. And that was that if you misappropriate money, you have to be actually suspended. When the panel looked at this, when the board looked at this, they saw all of the things. The differences that Mr. Caligiuri talks about between Edwards and Streeter, quite frankly, don't exist.
But I don't hear the Relator's counsel saying that he's trying to box this court into an actual suspension. What he has said to us is, here are the factors that distinguish it from Edwards, and Edwards did not get an actual suspension. So here's why Mr. Streeter's case is different than the Edwards case, and why an actual suspension in Mr. Streeter's case. I don't hear him saying there is a bright line that we want you to apply in all misappropriation cases.
I do believe he is saying that, with all due respect, Your Honor, when he says you have to send the message out. Frankly, the distinctions he makes don't have a difference. We've adequately briefed that, I believe, if you go back to our briefs. But if we talk about that, David Streeter had repaid all of the money before he received the letter of inquiry from disciplinary counsel. There was no money due and owing at the time he received the letter of inquiry.
Okay, but he had a few other things that were going on in his situation to prompt him to do that.
He did put the money back in prior to when he was notified after the audit by the Chicago Title Agency. But before, the reason the Rocky River Police Department did not press criminal charges is all the money had been paid back when they were looking at the case. And he did go out and reach out to family and friends to get the money. He told, what Mr. Caligiuri overlooks is that Mr. Edwards only reported after he got his letter of inquiry. He overdrew his account. He knew that was coming. So he didn't self-report anything any more than Dave Streeter did. The amount of money, if we look at the tables, the amount of money that they took really, we believe, is appropriately about $75,000. Now, I'm not saying that's a small amount of money. We're not saying it's right. We never have. However, there's really not much of a distinction between that and Edwards. The Edwards matter, and quite frankly, Mr. Edwards took the money to try to save his marriage and give his wife money to run a business. Mr. Streeter, in a somewhat similar manner, didn't have the heart because of his mental condition to let his employees go and not pay them.
So, Mr. Koblenz, are you reading Edwards as saying that this court says if there's a mental illness, that automatically means someone is going to get a total suspended sentence?
No, I'm not. But I am reading Edwards to say that when the mental illness mitigation appropriately appears, and when all the other factors are there, and we look at all the other mitigating factors that Mr. Streeter has that Mr. Edwards didn't have. We have 80 letters of recommendation. This court made a point out of saying that Mr. Edwards had 8. Now, I'm not saying that Mr. Edwards isn't a fine guy. I don't know him, but I'm sure he is. But 80 people came forward about Dave Streeter knowing.
What's your client doing now?
My client now is prepared and is working in an of-counsel capacity and under the auspices of another law firm, Deamer and Marinelli Law Firm. And he is working with them primarily in the real estate area, but under their total supervision. And that is the plan of what will go forward.
And so does he have a book of business or a series of clients that he has work in progress on, or if he's doing real estate, it's transaction by transaction, and that, so 6 months out would hurt his income but wouldn't have people hanging for 6 months? Wait, which is it?
I can't speak directly to all of his clientele, Your Honor. His area of expertise is the real estate field. A suspension would have a deleterious effect on Mr. Streeter. I believe it would affect his clientele, all of whom really honor and respect him. He is now in a situation where he does have people that will monitor the situation, handle the trust accounts, and do those various other things that will sufficiently protect the public. We have the mental health diagnosis, not only from a doubly boarded psychologist, Dr. Askenazi, but also Mr. Kamey from OLAP. And I believe if you get when Mr. Caligiuri comes back up and asks him, he will tell you, as he's told me many times, as he told the panel, Dave Streeter is as entitled to the benefit of the doubt as anybody is.
I guess I'm not seeing this case quite the same way you are. You opened your argument saying that the disciplinary counsel is trying to get us to have bright line rules. I don't think they are, and I think we've been pretty careful to take all of these cases one at a time. I thought his point was that the panel felt somewhat constrained by the decision in Edwards, and that they were regarding it as a bright line rule that caused them to make a recommendation that was other than what they would have gone with but for Edwards. Well, so I'm getting that the argument is the other way around, that the panel felt there was a bright line rule, not that we're being urged to have a bright line as such.
I would respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor. I read the same opinion that Mr. Caligiuri read that is in front of you. I believe the constraint is because of the factual similarities, not because of the bright line rule. I believe when Mr. Caligiuri comes and tells you we need to suspend him because he took money to send a message, that's the bright line that I believe he's advocating for. Now, granted, he didn't say bright line.
Right.
But I believe that he's trying to make that point. I believe that his office has taken this case up as a matter of policy. This is not about Dave Streeter. This is about what the Office of Disciplinary Counsel thinks in my view, the policy needs to be regardless of the mitigation, regardless of the individual.
But we're talking about misuse of client funds, misappropriation of client funds, and law students are told, you know, you misapply client funds, you potentially can lose your ticket. I mean, that's the philosophy that we have had in the past, have we not?
Absolutely, and I think we're not arguing against that. What we're saying is every case stands on its own. This court took the enlightened view in mental health cases, such as Edwards, also such as Funstein, such as Meehan, that when we look at mental health mitigation, we have to take that into account and look at the individual.
We have a history of doing that, and there's no reason why we wouldn't apply the same analysis that we've applied in those other cases to your client's case here. And I think that, you know, there's little support for your contention that we are being asked to do a bright line test where whenever there is going to be a misappropriation of funds, we will automatically start from the position of suspension. Our history does not support that.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and we honor that. And what we're saying is that position of the court should continue in this case.
Okay, but what is troubling here, to me at least, is the statement by the board that we feel constrained by Edwards to use Edwards as the bright line test for cases going forward. And I am not looking at Edwards as a bright line test.
And quite frankly, either did I. And I don't know that the board does. I believe, and again, I can't read the minds of who wrote that opinion. My take on it is that because of the factual similarities, because of these cases dovetail right in, and quite frankly, I watched the argument in Edwards, which touched off the fact when I talked to Mr. Kelly, a jury, that I believe that the winds have changed. And I think that because when I watched the Edwards case, I'm going, that's Dave Streeter. The Dave Streeter case was pending at that time, and I'm going like, this is our case. It's the exact same case. In fact, I called Mr. Kelly Drew the next day and said, I just watched this. And then I talked to Ms. Costa, who argued the case, and talked to her about that and said, tell me where this is different. And I laid the facts out, and she said, it's really not.
Well, we don't have to hear your private conversations with the counsel.
My point is, Your Honor, is that I believe that the board, and I can't read their minds any more than I, with all due respect, Mr. Kelly, a jury can, with all due respect, I believe you can, without actually asking them what they meant. But the way I read it was that because of the factual similarities, and they had obviously their board opinion and their factual basis for Edwards in front of them when they looked at this case, said that because the facts were the same, they felt that that was the appropriate law to use. Now maybe, Your Honor.
Counsel, let me just have an exchange with you about how I might look at this case versus a different one. Your client's relatively young and relatively new in the practice, right? 10 years or so?
I believe my client's 38 years old, Your Honor. He's been practicing since, I believe, 2001.
And so when he comes back, he's still got a long time to practice. And even if we adopted the recommendation of disciplinary counsel, he's coming back. So it seems to me like maybe his case is one where a little time out, particularly if he doesn't have a lot of clients who have major cases in play, that is, his work is transactional, so he's not leaving. If he's got some time out, he's not leaving anybody hanging. He's going to miss the income for sure. That's not such a bad outcome all the way around versus somebody who maybe had practiced a long time, has a lot of clients with cases that are midstream and has the same factual background that your client has. Am I wrong in thinking that that he got into all this trouble so quickly into his practice should weigh against him?
I believe you are, Your Honor, with all due respect. I would like to just point out that the purpose of the system, and I honor that, I believe you honor that, is to protect the public, not to punish the lawyer. I don't think we look at the lawyer and say, oh, then we give you one set of standards if you've been practicing 25 years, but another set of standards if you've been practicing 10 years.
25 years without any problems.
Right.
Versus getting into them pretty quickly.
But Mr. Streeter, I was up here arguing a case where the Chief Justice asked me, well, since my client was older in the practice, shouldn't he be treated more severely? So I don't know where the court stands on that. That was an argument that I had.
I'm asking you the question. Persuade us.
Well, where I'm looking at, Your Honor, is that what we have to look at is what is sufficient to protect the public under all of the circumstances. All of the reparative action has been taken by Mr. Streeter. He is 2 years into his OLAP contract, 2 years into his mental health treatment. Unanimously, everybody has talked about how well he has done, how he has adapted to that treatment, how this has made him a new person. He has taken the arrangements. First of all, he was not practicing law when this, he was running a title company. With his practice of law, he has gone to a law firm of well-respected lawyers who are monitoring and mentoring him, and they are handling all the money. So that part of the thing where the public would need protection is handled in that situation. I believe that if we look at this in a way that says our goal is not to punish the attorney, but to protect the public under all circumstances, under all of the case law, under the facts in this case, that the public will be more than adequately protected by the state suspension that has been recommended by the Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline. With all due respect, Your Honor.
Mr. Goebbels, I have a question on what you just responded. You say he is not practicing law today?
No, he is. He was not practicing law at the time that the misconduct took place. He was running a title company. If you go back,
but he was licensed as a lawyer.
Oh, no, he's licensed as a lawyer. I'm not saying he wasn't licensed as a lawyer. My point is when I was addressing Justice Pfeiffer's questions about his practice of law, he was strictly operating a title company when this happened, and it was the real estate crash. Things went, I think everybody knows what happened. We don't have to go into that. If you read the facts, and I don't want to get into that, but if you take a look at the record, he worked for an older lawyer who owned the title company. The title company was passed along to him with a lot of debt. He didn't realize it.
He inherited chaos.
Exactly, and he wasn't smart enough or old enough to realize that he was inheriting chaos. He thought that he had an opportunity to become his own boss and run a company, and that was a mistake. With all due respect, I know my time is about up. I would simply ask that this court review the record, look at the similarities, look at the mitigation, look at the individual, and ask yourselves the question of, don't you believe that the enlightened view of how we look at mental health mandates the idea that we follow the precedent in Edwards and grant the state suspension that has been recommended by this board? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel?
Thank you. Relator is not asking this court to establish a bright line test or a bright line rule. We're simply asking you to review this case as it stands on its own set of facts, individually and uniquely. There are substantial differences when you get into the nitty-gritty between Edwards and the respondent's case. And the board was constrained, so to speak, by Edwards. They felt, if you read that opinion, it's pretty clear, they couldn't do anything but issue a stayed suspension. So we're just asking this court to understand that there are differences between those two cases and issue a 2-year suspension with 18-month stay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement and you will be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.